Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 214. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing?
I think it is crazy to me that we are a month and a half on from the big Move It campaign starting, and it is still emerging every day new companies that are confirmed to or probably have gotten clopped. That's the verb I'm coming up with for this. Clopped. What do you think of that?
I'll go with it. I like it.
Thanks.
Yes, we are. I should say we're recording this on July 11th, morning of July 11th, sunny Tuesday here. And we are discussing the latest with the data extortion attacks on Move It transfer customers. As you said, we are now about a month and a half out from when the attacks on the Move It transfer zero-day vulnerability first began to unfold around or just prior to Memorial Day weekend. And slowly but surely, a number of victims have come forward in the subsequent weeks following that zero-day emergence. And some victims have come forward on their own to say, yes, we were breached and we are disclosing this breach. A lot of victims have been named by the Clop ransomware group on the data leak site on the dark web. And some of those victims have confirmed. A couple of them have denied, I think at least a couple have staunchly denied that they were breached. So maybe there's, you know, maybe there's some mix up. It's not an exact science. And a lot of the companies have remained silent or remained silent for a while and then came out and said, yeah, we looked at this and we suffered a data breach, but it's not that bad. Shell Global looking at you. So Alex, you just wrote an article.
Yeah.
That looked at the impact of this attack of the Clop campaign. And we should note that the Clop campaign was believed to be perpetrated by a threat actor Microsoft calls Lace Tempest that is associated with the Clop ransomware gang. But these attacks did not apparently involve any actual ransomware. They just involved this threat actor exploiting a vulnerability and going into these Move It transfer instances and sweeping up a lot of sensitive confidential data. How sensitive the data is, no, not really sure. We're going to get into that in a second. You got some expert opinions, perspectives on the matter. But yes, tell us what you found in trying to assess, I guess, how successful this campaign has been from a threat actor perspective and how damaging it's been from a victim perspective.
Right. So I think the reason why I started looking into this is we were talking about this sort of whole campaign, the Move It, the Clop, all that. Yes. And I think the thing we kept coming back to was there are these dozens and dozens and dozens of people getting apparently compromised through this vulnerability being exploited. And a lot of people are disclosing way more than I've ever seen in one of these like sort of campaigns at this early on. And we're like, but I don't think really much of anyone is paying. Like there have been a couple reports of a couple big names, which I haven't confirmed, so I won't say here, but there have been some reports of a couple names that have supposedly paid, but it doesn't seem like many have paid, especially because on Clop's ransomware, or, well, this isn't ransomware, but they're a ransomware actor, I guess, their data theft extortion dark web leak site. Every single day, there's a list of like 10 new websites that they're dumping the data from. And so I went to some experts and I from various vendors, and I was like, are you tracking this? If so, what are you seeing? And people are pretty mixed. Like, it doesn't seem completely clear at the moment who is paid and who hasn't. Right. But it seems like there haven't been many payments. It seems like the name of the game for this campaign was like wide in scope. So they like there are 250 people who have been or organizations that have been named, but shallow. And yeah. that the data stolen does not seem very high quality, which is because it's all managed file transfer instances, which most of the time you're not going to put your most sensitive data on there. Now with 2,000 exposed servers at the time that it became known that this was being exploited, 2,500, I think NCC Group said, that it's like it kind of maybe there's more, and maybe as a result of this scale, you're going to see some people who did get serious data compromised. But so far, it seems like the data hasn't been that crazy. What's been stolen? It seems like not a ton of people have paid. And it seems like, as Jen Easterly and some CISA folks said a couple of weeks back, this has been a very opportunistic attack from Klopp, meaning they're trying to hit scale, not quality of breaches, which is sort of the decision they made. And so people aren't sure exactly how successful it is, but one of the key points that they kept coming back to was because there was no encryption, and because incident response firms are getting better, and because victims are getting better at being victims, you end up in this situation where companies are realizing that if a ransomware group has your data, they technically will always have your data. And in 99% of situations, maybe 90% of situations, it's better to just ignore them because the damage is already done. And you're just paying them for something you can't guarantee. And I think without encryption, you're not going to have nearly as much downtime. Maybe there will be downtime in sort of legally navigating, let's say, disclosures and all that stuff. If you're particularly
but not network company. Downtime, you know, not operational downtime. Right.
Exactly. Which is where a lot of the ransomware problems come in, is not just the public nightmare of sort of disclosing an attack, but the 7 days of downtime leading to millions and millions of dollars of cost that is stacked on top of even paying the ransom. So that's sort of where I landed, is people aren't sure yet because things are still emerging. The scope is enormous. Brett Callow from MSSoft has been tracking it, and he's at like 267 named potential organizations that have been hit by this. And I was told by Bill Siegel of Coveware, who's their CEO and co-founder, that it was like a very sophisticated attack, despite some of the stuff we were talking about on previous episodes.
Sure,
we're gonna repeat. But it doesn't seem like this is something where you're going to get a huge percentage of organizations paying, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's not successful, because maybe $1 million is enough for this to be worth it to them.
Yeah.
But it seems like, despite the big name aspect to it and how much coverage this has been getting, and how much people have been interested in it, it doesn't seem like this is a SolarWinds level threat or some devastating thing like Log4j, Log4Shell that we're going to remember for years and years to come.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, you know, Siegel made an interesting point in the article, you know, just based on their, I guess, their tracking of the campaign. Coveware estimated that it seems like very few victims actually paid. And, you know, it's hard to track how many names are up on that leak site at any given time and then are taken down. There are some threat researchers out there and some open source intelligence organizations, collectives out there that have been monitoring that. Again, it's hard to tell the differences on that list from day to day or even hour to hour. Sometimes there's names going on. There's more names just dropped a minute ago. And I think Brett had said on Twitter, now it's up to around 270, and only about, I think, 50 of those names have confirmed or acknowledged. So let's just start with, okay, 250, mm-hmm. 60, 70, whatever it is, organizations. You know, to your point about all it takes is one company to really, like, it, all it takes is the threat actor, Lace Tempest in this case, to get a hold of some really sensitive data that doesn't need to be in an MFT, should not be in an MFT, maybe is against policy, corporate policy, for a managed file transfer product, or for that organization's data usage to be in a managed file transfer product. And for that threat actor to sweep it up through an automated, you know, data collection tool or data exfiltration tool. And you get $1 million, maybe more, who knows? That's great for them. But I guess the thing that is kind of bothering me about this is Clop now, this is the third zero day, I believe, that they've exploited in a managed file transfer product, I believe. So Acelion and then Fortra, the Go Anywhere product, that was last year, right? Mm-hmm. So many of these attacks, it's hard to keep track of. So
there are probably more than those three, two, if they've been here for 4 or 5 years.
Yes. So it's entirely possible that there's somebody in that collective, in that ransomware gang, who is very good at this stuff and who got this, who developed this exploit, found these vulnerabilities, these zero days on their own. It's possible. What I think is more likely is that they probably paid. There's been a ton of research the last few years about how more vulnerabilities, more end days and zero days are being used by ransomware groups to launch attacks. And that's been sort of taken as a sign by different security vendors and threat analysts that that's a good thing because they can't just rely on phishing emails and bad security postures to, you know, slip something by an enterprise and initiate a successful attack. They've got to use some type of vulnerability and they've got to use it relatively, you know, soon after it's been disclosed or whatever. But let's say they paid for a zero day. Mm-hmm. It's hard to tell like what they might have paid for it, but you look at some of the numbers. I was just looking at this the other day. You could get a zero day on a dark web market for, you know, $20,000 in Bitcoin, $30,000 in Bitcoin. I don't know how good those zero days are, but you see them advertised semi-frequently. And then there are higher priced ones that, you know, they're sort of cryptically described, but they can be, you know, 500,000, a million. You know, you talk about an iOS zero click exploit, that could be millions of dollars. Now, I don't think they spent millions of dollars on a zero day vulnerability of this class, but if they spent, I don't know, 100,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe a little bit more, I assume they want more than just like a $200,000 or $250,000 payout. And again, we have no idea what they're asking for in terms of ransoms. Those negotiations, those requests have been, I believe, offline. I don't think there's been any sort of intelligence about what the demands are and what the payments are. Some ransomware gangs, their customer service portals, I'm doing air quotes, are public and you can access them and you can see what's going on and you can see the chatter between, you know, the ransomware negotiator or the breach coach or whoever, legal counsel and the ransomware gang. And it ain't always pretty. And you can see what they're asking for. In this case, we don't know. So there's a lot of unknowns, but I gotta believe that you know, for all the work that went into this in terms of collecting all that data, coming up with an exploit for a zero day, spending the time and probably the money to do this, probably want a little bit more than just a couple $100,000. So I don't know. This does not seem like it is ultimately going to be an incredibly lucrative campaign for Klopp, but it, to the point, and I forgot who made it in your article, if they just get like $1 million, that's probably enough for them, right?
Yeah. I think it's interesting that they did this large scale spray and pray campaign, which I guess it is both happening constantly, yeah, but has never been, it has never been undertaken in this exact way, I feel like, in my memory, where you have hundreds of organizations whose names are in the spotlight at the exact same time, including governments who were dealing with this. I mean, there were, yeah, like, unless you'd count like WannaCry, but that's kind of a different sort of thing.
No, that's, yeah, it's different.
Yeah. So I think the spray and pray aspect is very interesting. And I think their idea is maybe this is low quality data, but if we hit, let's say, 1,000 people or 500 organizations at the same time, maybe whatever numbers they may have ran, assuming they ran numbers, might line up and say this is a good gamble for us. Because, yeah, like, according to vendor reports, like, they've earned well over $500 million in their time hacking people.
Klopp, you mean? Yeah, yeah.
Klopp, yeah. And I didn't include this in the article, but Bill Siegel of Coveware, I asked him, like, hey, you guys are tracking this, I'm guessing, because they're a ransomware-focused incident response firm. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you have any idea of what people are paying, what's being demanded, how many folks have paid? And he's like, we don't have the exact numbers, but he declined to give me any payment numbers because his argument was that you shouldn't put too much stock, or ransomware demand numbers, because you shouldn't put too much stock into this, what a ransomware gang is demanding.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, the negotiators will tell you all the time that you know, that I think 70% of the negotiations they do, 75% end with a significantly reduced payment. So
the other interesting thing was I was on Klopp's ransomware leak site yesterday after a half hour of attempting to solve CAPTCHAs, and because the dark web has the worst by which I mean best bot prevention out there, and when Klopp would, let's say, unveil a new list of supposedly compromised organizations, and I won't name names, they'll sometimes put little notes that sort of disclose why they're being published. And for one pretty big organization, they were like, we tried to negotiate, but they tried to negotiate too low, they lowballed us, and so too bad, so sad, here's their data. And there were a couple references, I think, to ransomware negotiations. Now, they could be lying. They're probably lying about all so much. I mean, they referred to themselves as a pen testing firm on their own site. But let's say it is true that there was some attempt at ransomware negotiation. That, to me, at least says there are at least some organizations with some data that may be valuable enough to attempt to negotiate, even in a half-hearted way, which then says, I'm guessing some organizations are paying. I don't know how much they're paying. I don't know how much they can negotiate down. I don't know if it's going to be enough to clear whatever they paid for it. But in my imagination, I feel like if they paid, I think they're going to get more than 100,000. I just don't know how much more.
Yeah. So let me propose two items. Sure. So first, do you think, this is more of a question because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Do you think all of the victims were breached around the same time? In other words, do you think any of the victims that have come to light have come, you know, because they've been breached more recently, i.e. well after a zero day was disclosed in the MFT product, and for whatever reason they weren't quick enough to react, to patch, to address it, et cetera, et cetera, and the attacks are ongoing? Or do you think most of them, do you think all of these were just, you know, they happened over a weekend, and like a lot of people have said, this was just sort of an automated attack where, you know, they were sweeping up data and it was done in the span of a couple of days.
I think mostly the second. Yeah. That's what I think. I think it was mostly the second. I think there could have been a subsequent wave either from Klopp or one of its affiliates that isn't this Lace Tempest or another ransomware actor. Yep. But we haven't heard of another ransomware actor being involved in this.
Right, right.
But I'm inclined to think that at least for the most part, it's probably the latter. The idea that they're automating this, they're hitting everyone they can. Maybe they do a second wave on the back end. I don't know. But yeah. But I'm inclined to think this was very opportunistic and thoughtfully lazy, if that makes sense.
So I do too. The one thing that gives me pause about all of this is that, you know, and I noticed this with the previous MFT campaigns with Klopp, a lot of the organizations that disclosed or confirmed attacks and breaches as a result of these, like, you know, these ransomware campaigns or data extortion campaigns, they kind of conspicuously avoid like timing, like dates, saying when they were breached and how, and like, I don't know. It always kind of struck me as odd. Like maybe they just figured that everybody knows generally when this stuff started to happen and they don't need to do it. But part of me wonders, a more sort of cynical and skeptical part of me wonders, well, maybe some of these guys just got nailed a week or two or more after all this stuff first came to light and the threat actor or ransomware group was out there, you know, still doing the hustle, still making attacks, still trying to get out there and sweep up whatever data they can. I don't know that that's the case. I just hope, I wish some of these disclosures were more detailed about the timing, so you can understand and get clarity about when they knew, when they were attacked, and yes, we patched our systems, or we moved all of our data out of these MFTs, or whatever. Just, you know, a little bit more clarity on that. Another thing I wonder, and I know I've talked about sort of like the bright side to this campaign, and I still believe that. I mean, I feel like if this had happened maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it probably would have involved real encryption of real networks and just been a lot. The scope of the damage, maybe it would have been as broad, but the damage would have been deeper. The disruption, there would have been real sort of chaos, I guess. But the thing I wonder about is, if you were Lace Tempest and you had just decided to go in, collect the data, not make your presence known, but just collect the data in a discreet way, go through the data, look for email accounts, passwords, maybe there's some SSH keys, encryption keys, API key, who knows? Maybe there's sensitive data in there that you can use to get into the actual network, and then launch like real ransomware attacks on maybe just a handful of organizations, maybe just 5 or 6 out of 250 or 270 or whatever it ultimately is. What was the number of exposed instances that was referenced in your article? What did they say? 2,500?
Yeah, I think it was 2,500. Oh, sorry. Around 2,500 MOVEit appliances were internet reachable and thus vulnerable, said Mike Stockel, who's a threat analyst at the NCC Group subsidiary, Fox IT.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just wonder if that would have been a more lucrative approach than to do, like you said, the spray and pray. And if you're good enough to get a 0 day in another MFT, then why not just go for a more, you know, a potentially bigger payday that's going to involve a little bit more work, but, you know, you don't have to sift through as much data with as, I don't know, and negotiate with as many organizations and hit them up and do all that. Like if you just sort of zeroed in on a few that you could achieve network access to, assuming you could, maybe you can't, then I don't know. Maybe that would have been a better approach, a more classic ransomware approach.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Last thing we should mention, Alex, is this was kind of important. So Progress Software discovered just after 4th of July, they discovered another SQL server, SQL injection flaw in MOVEit Transfer. Just like the one that was the 0 day that was exploited in these attacks. I think that makes three, but maybe four. Just have to go back and look at it. And they announced that they are going to start doing sort of regular service packs for MOVEit Transfer. I'll read the advisory. In response to recent customer feedback, we are formalizing a regular service pack program for MOVEit products, including MOVEit Transfer and MOVEit Automation. These service packs will provide a predictable, simple, and transparent process for product fixes, for product and security fixes. Please refer to our product lifecycle for more details. Link below. So that's interesting. Now, I know we did an article, I believe it was Ariel did an article on the SQL injection flaws and SQL injection flaws show up on OWASP's, top 10 list every year. And there's stuff that they're bad bugs that you should detect early on and hammer out and not have lurking in your software. But so three of these at least, and now the organization is like, oh, well, I think it's time we start doing a Patch Tuesday of our own every month. I found that to be pretty notable. I think it's good that they're doing it, but I think it may have revealed a bit of a weakness in their software security and their product security beforehand.
Well, I think it's kind of the conversation of it doesn't always feel good that it took them screwing up for them to get better.
Right.
Right. But maybe that's how it is most of the time that it takes, or maybe it used to be most of the time, like where you had to screw up to learn that there's a better way of doing things. On the other hand, it's also not 2008 anymore, right? So it's sort of interesting to see them make these huge sweeping policy changes at the same time. I don't know. I feel weird about it. How do you feel?
I think it's good that they did it, and maybe they didn't need to do it before. I don't know. I do think this many SQL injection flaws suggest that there's maybe, I don't want to say sloppiness, but I don't know. I mean, we like the discussion about software liability is, at least in inner circles and InfoSec types and certainly for media like us, that's been a big topic of discussion this year. And holding vendors and software developers responsible for, poorly developed code that's insecure and has a lot of bugs. I don't think, again, we talked about this in a previous spot. I don't think that we're there yet with really any major vendor, let alone Progress, for a few SQL injection flaws. But I do think you're inching closer to that when you have that many flaws of this nature. So I don't know. it's hard to fault them for doing the right thing, even though it's in reaction to a bad event and not a mistake on their part, because it's a zero day. But probably something that they should have found beforehand. I don't know. It's hard. I mean, one of the things they pointed out in Ariel's article about SQL injections and the nature of these flaws is, you know, there's just so many dependencies, and there's just so you're constantly, you know, tweaking your code and using different components and libraries. And like, you may introduce something that wasn't there before in an update, and it's hard. It's hard work. Not to excuse this stuff, but it does make me wonder if our tolerance collectively and the government's tolerance for this type of stuff is going to continue to fall. And this type of stuff is going to be scrutinized more, because I mean, if another zero day or another flaw starts getting exploited like this for progress, I think it is going to start to open up some questions. I think Acelion, you know, came under fire for their stuff a couple years ago. Was it 2020 or 2021? I don't remember. It's all blending together now, these CLOP campaigns.
Acelion?
Yeah.
So I think the initial exploitation happened at the tail end of 2020, okay. But like a lot of the news happened in 2021.
Right. Okay. So I don't know. It's not a good look. And I think Acelion is probably still dealing with a little bit of the fallout from not just that bug, but there's been a lot of like, you know, vulnerabilities that they've had to contend with. And I'm sure that's not created a great image for them, but yeah, we'll see how it goes for progress. I mean, good that they're doing this. I want to be clear on this. Good that they're doing a regular service pack, but you're kind of left wondering why they maybe didn't do it before.
So, mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's it for now. And I mean, the victim count is still going. I mean, geez, Brett's out there doing the Lord's work. He just tweeted another couple of victims, I guess, while we were recording this. So the number keeps going up.
I sent him an email. I was like, you need to stop updating these because I have to keep updating the hyperlink in my article and the number in the story with new victims.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. And again, only around 50, I think, have confirmed that they were definitely breached. But we're going to be watching this. We're going to be covering it very closely as time goes on, as we already have. So, stay tuned for more. And Alex, thank you so much for not just the work you did on the article, but for discussing the topic with me on the pod today.
Hey, you bet.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.